Welcome to Come Read With Me. I'm Jeff, and this is my world. This podcast is about getting to know my friends better by reading a book with them and discussing it. Some of these friends read a lot, some read a little, and some, honestly, I'm not sure can read, but we'll find out, that's for sure. Today's guest reader is Emily. Emily is one of the first people I met when I moved to Boston. We were both in AmeriCorps, and she served with Caroline from episode one. She just recently graduated.
Yes.
With her master's in social work, and I'll let her say what she is doing since then. Say hey.
Hello. I'm Emily, and I am currently a school social worker in the Boston Public Schools. And I'm very excited and a little bit nervous about this podcast, so
no,
I'm ready for it. It's my first one.
You'll be great. You work with kids.
And correct.
So this is not anything to be nervous about.
Yeah.
Because kids are crazy.
They are.
And now, you started that before you graduated, right?
I started that this past September, so September 2014.
Okay. So.
But I've been working with kids in
constantly
various capacities for the last 6 years.
Okay. And then.
Scary.
We're getting old, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, I'm not ready. What did you do in undergrad? I can never remember.
In undergrad, I was a marketing and journalism major.
Oh, okay. So
what
made you?
So I did a 180 and,
yeah,
and went
what
for
was
social
it?
Work. Honestly, it was my year of AmeriCorps.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of changed my mindset and got me interested in.
That's great. And
in
you,
the nonprofit
you
field.
Did AmeriCorps with a smaller nonprofit that worked with teen girls.
Yes.
That's right. Okay. All right. Well, that's it's good. It changed
yeah.
your life.
You never know what's going to
yeah.
what's going to come next.
No, it was what did you find? So you are originally from Ohio.
Mm-hmm.
How was it transitioning to Boston?
It was good. I applied for the position on a whim and I moved out here. I interviewed and moved within a couple months.
Wow.
I'd never been to Boston.
Oh,
so.
But you love it.
I do love it. I needed a change, and I thought, why not just go for it? And
yeah. Now,
I'm
and,
still here.
Oh, we all are.
Yeah.
We all are. I feel like most of us have come, especially our friend group and all the friends that we have that overlap.
Yeah.
We all came from, very few of us are local.
We came here and we stayed.
Yeah.
That's a good sign.
Did, were you, I can't remember, you were thinking about moving back to the Midwest, right?
Yes.
Because all of your family's out there.
Yeah. It's still in the back of my mind. I don't know. I love it here.
I know.
I can't imagine having to start over again.
Yeah.
And the people here are great. I found, my...
Your niche.
My people, yeah.
Yeah. And you also live in the North End, which is pretty cool.
Yes.
How's the food there?
Oh, my gosh.
Have you gained any weight since being there?
I probably have. But it's, yeah, any time of day, I can get pizza, I can get pasta, and it's and it smells. I can just smell, the bread, and there's a 24-hour bakery that I can give cupcake at, 2 a.m., and it tastes like heaven.
I'm very short. I'm very short. So what we're going to discuss today, we are going to discuss I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings by Maya Angelou. Is it Angelou or Angelou?
Maya Angelou. I think it's O.
I think
but
it's
But I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I'm lazy, so I'm not going to look
yeah.
it up. You picked the book. I gave you a list, and I said, these are all the books that I own, or that I already had copies of, and it was the one you picked. So why that one?
I knew that I had read it before in high school, and
yeah.
I remember liking it. And one of my old supervisors was a huge fan of Maya Angelou.
Okay.
And so those things combined. I was like, I think I want to give that one a shot again.
Well, and I was really glad you picked it because I bought it 2 weeks before she died because I was I've never read it. Never read anything by her. And it was at the Somerville Public Library sale. And I picked up a copy and then she died. And then I was like, well, I don't want to read it so close after because people think I'm reading it because of that. And then you picked it and I was like, that's a great excuse.
Yeah.
We can read it now. So, all right, well, when we come back, we are going to go right into discussing the book. All right, so we are just going to jump right in. Who said why you selected it, so why you picked the novel? Do you remember anything from high school when you read it? I know we were talking before, and you were like, oh, it's so different, but, are there any snippets? Because I did not have to read this.
Yeah. I remember when I read it that I was surprised at some of the things that I read, and the fact that was a high school book.
Then when
I reread it, I realized it was the part with Mr. Mom's...
Oh, her stepdad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't
remember.
Mr. Anderson?
Maybe.
Anyways, when I came back to that part, that's the part that I remembered, because okay. It was just it. I think it was the first time I had ever heard anything like yeah. that. Like that actually happens, and it was just.
When it was very jarring.
Yeah.
Like the way it happened, it's not as jarring. Have you ever read *The Color Purple*?
No.
By Alice Walker. That starts up with one of those scenes.
Yeah.
And it's a heart-wrenching scene. Like, that mm-hmm. novel probably affected me more than this novel, but that's something else to talk about later. But that scene, you're just kind of like... It forces you into, like, such an uncomfortable place.
Right.
And then you just have to read about it, and then you connect this back to the fact that this is a biography.
Yeah. The fact that it actually happened. I had that in the back of my mind. I'm like, oh my gosh.
Yeah. And then, but then you also have on the other side, you've got that she goes on to become this amazing figure. Mm-hmm. And you're just kind of like, wow, everything that she overcame. So, like, did you know that this is a series of books?
No.
Like, she's only ever written poetry and her life story.
Oh, really?
I did not know that. One of my blogging friends told me.
Oh, that's
and
interesting.
So it's, I don't know how many there are. I want to say it's like 7 or 8. And each one is like, so this is just up until she's 20. And then the next
and
one
there's
is
one...
like... right after, and then uh-huh. the one after that, and the one after that. So it sounds like it's something that would be interesting to read.
Oh, I would because the way it ended, I'm like, there's still so much more
yeah.
to know. So I didn't realize that there was another one.
Yeah, well, and she's so young.
Yeah.
And just in the first 20 years, you're like, well, when I was 20, I went to college, and like, wasn't that rough? And then it's part of it is the time, part of it is, you know, obviously she's a black woman in the mm-hmm. South, and I think it was her story, like that,
yeah.
you know, that's, it was her identity, and the identity is the story, so like you just had to buy into that. But one of the things that I had a problem with, so we were talking about the biography, mm-hmm. the biographical nature of it, I kept having a problem realizing this was a biography.
Yes.
Because she went by... what name did she go by? It wasn't Maya, because Maya is a shortened form.
Was it Rita?
That's what I was thinking. Because I think her full name, her actual name is Margarita.
Yeah.
And...
I agree with you, because when I first started reading it, I thought, I forgot that it was biographical. When she, her name, like the name that she was called by her family, it didn't, I never really, I only heard Maya mentioned in there a few times, I felt like.
Yeah.
So I forgot... no, this is her story.
Yeah.
Because they didn't, or, I don't know.
Now, do you think that was effective? As I'm looking for her name, still, did you think it was effective, or did it sort of, because it actually, that part, the fact that she went by another name, and that she's known by another name now, it separated the action from me, so that rape scene that we were talking about mm-hmm. at the beginning, it made it, you know, it was still a horrible scene,
yeah.
knowing she was, what, 10
mm-hmm.
or not even 10, but the fact that the person in the book felt so separated from the person Maya Angelou because they didn't have the same name, like,
yeah.
I didn't know if it was as powerful as it would have been.
If in the book she had been addressed
as Maya.
As Maya, yeah.
Because I feel like for our entire lives, she has been known as Maya Angelou.
Mm-hmm.
And even in the book, the one time that I can definitely remember... where they talk about why they call her Maya. Yeah, so her name was Margaret.
Did she get that brief period of time when she was working for the white family?
And that's
and
what
they
I just
would
found.
Call her, I can't remember what they called her.
It was Mary, because that's the scene where I found.
I mean, obviously it was intentional, but I think it kind of plays into the whole... the book itself, because a lot of the book was her figuring out her own identity and where mm-hmm. she fit and who she was, and so I think the name kind of is a could
yeah.
be considered as, I don't know, like a theme along that.
Yeah, well, and that makes me wonder if, you know, in book 2 or book 3
mm-hmm.
where she comes and she says I am Maya,
yeah,
or you know how that transition sort of like the coming of age, because this is a coming of age, but she's barely an adult
mm-hmm.
by the time the end of the book. I mean, she's got the worldly experiences of adults, obviously,
yeah.
but it's very, I don't know, that distance, it just didn't work for
mm-hmm.
me.
That's interesting, because I thought about it in the book, and I remember just being a little bit thrown off or confused by it, but I didn't like, I haven't thought about it more until right now, so it's interesting that you...
Yeah, and that was... And I think it's
too.
Because, you know, in... going back to The Color Purple, that mm-hmm. is obviously... It's semi-autobiographical. But it's the same thing. It's a black woman in the South,
mm-hmm.
and she is also raped, but she's raped by her father, by a father figure.
Yeah.
And because there wasn't that confusion between, is this the author, is it not the author, it was so much more powerful to me. I mean,
yeah.
that male, the rapist in, or the perpetrator, I'm not sure what the actual term is, in The Color Purple is harsher.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's worse. He's not as, in this one, he's, you know, I mean, they're all bad, but in
yeah.
this one, he's more subtle, more corrupting versus
yeah.
in The Color Purple. He's like, I will beat you. Don't tell, if you ever tell anyone this, I'll kill your mom or something like
mm-hmm.
that.
Is that, did she get pregnant in The Color Purple?
I don't remember.
It's sounding familiar. I feel like I might have read that.
I think she does. It's Cece and...
Yeah.
I don't remember the sister's name, yeah.
I read that years ago.
Yeah, and it's another school book, and I'm like, I
yeah.
don't, I would, I wish I would have had to face some of these things as a high schooler. I don't think my maturity level was there.
No.
I'm sure the reason I didn't face these two books specifically is because I grew up in the South.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they were very,
oh.
very, like, new.
Particular about what
of
they...
that shelf. Yeah. You know,
think.
It was very, all of the literature was very whitewashed except for
mm-hmm.
our world literature. And I think we read Chinua Achebe was the only black author that I can definitely remember.
Oh, wow.
Let alone black female author.
Yeah.
That's
interesting to think about it.
Yeah. It's like, I want to go back and reread all the books that I read in high school just to
Me
get
too.
A different perspective. The one I don't want to read, is about a black protagonist, but it's because the writing was so bad. It's The Invisible Man.
Oh, yeah, I read that one.
It's actually, that's not the one. That one I did not like the writing, but it wasn't as bad as All the King's Men.
Oh, I didn't do
which
that.
Which was Robert Penn Warren. Don't ever read it.
Okay.
Never read it. It's a Stream of Consciousness, like...
Oh, no.
In such a bad way. I can do Stream of Consciousness, like Virginia Woolf's Stream of Consciousness, but this was... So, Southern fiction. So this is definitely... Even though this is... autobiographical, or no, let's stick with that for a minute. So what do you think, is this autobiographical, is it a memoir, I guess, sound crazy when I say that,
yeah.
or is it something like in between? Do you think it's slightly fictionalized? Like, because that's another thing that I have issues with, is the autobiographies and the memoirs. Like, if you call it a memoir, it's obviously it's from your memories.
Mm-hmm.
If you call it an autobiography, which I think this one is, yeah, it's classified as an autobiography. Where
I like reading memoirs, and so I've read quite a few. I would look at this more as a memoir.
Okay, that's what I would think. And so, but you think, because it's like it's colored by her thoughts.
Yeah, I don't know. I think it's just me. But when somebody remembers all those details, I'm
yeah.
like, I feel like it happened, but it has her own spin on it.
Yeah, and it's not as factual.
Yeah.
And I think that's another thing that I also sort of was kind of like, well, how old was she when she wrote this?
Mm-hmm.
How far back was she?
I was wondering
looking?
That. She wrote it even like as a grown woman, like in her 40s or 50s, and going back all the way to when she was
20 years before.
You know,
yeah.
5, 6 and on up. That
yeah.
It's very detailed to
yeah.
be an autobiography.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to look up. And it is, and I think that's part of it, is because it's very much... You definitely have to look back on an autobiography, but
yeah.
it's not like you're not saying, on this date I did this. It's broader sweeping.
Mm-hmm.
But it was. It was, I think, the language. And maybe it's just how beautiful her writing
yeah.
is. And maybe that's why we think it's a memoir. I'm sure this has been discussed before. So it was published in 1969.
Oh, wow.
And she was born... So it's a 7-volume series. I just saw that. She was born in 1928. So it was almost... It was published almost 40 years after
oh, wow.
she was born. Now, we don't... She may have been writing it this whole time. It may have been journals, obviously.
Yeah.
But it's still... It's very... It does. It makes you wonder how much of it was true, meaning
mm-hmm.
fact, and how much of it was true to memory.
Yeah.
So, and it is. It's kind of like, because I like you, every now and then I'll read a memoir, and I'm like, oh, this is great. I love this.
Yeah.
I should read more memoirs. Whereas this one, I was kind of like, is it a memoir? Is it autobiography?
Yeah.
That was one of the other things where I was kind of like, I don't know, that irks me.
Yeah, it did. Just when I was finishing it up, I'm like, she remembers all these names and these conversations and some, I don't know.
Yeah, but it was helpful.
It made me think
because,
a little more.
Yeah, but it was also helpful because 90% of the characters are family.
Mm-hmm.
So it is very family focused, and it is, from what I can remember, she doesn't talk about anything that happens outside of where she is at the time.
Mm-mm.
So she's not talking about world events or that sort of thing.
Yeah.
She's only talking about what's immediately happening around her, which sort of makes it more autobiography and memoir versus like, when I was 10, the world was ending, like that sort of thing. This is not a piece of fiction, but I did want to ask about this. How do you feel about Southern writers and Southern fiction? So I don't know, because, you know, as we said earlier, I grew up in the South. I'm attracted to Southern writers and Southern fiction. Do you have a similar thing to, like, the Midwest, or do you like them? Do you notice when you read?
Yeah. Honestly, I don't really notice, but I like, I don't know. I think I grew up very sheltered and unaware of anything related to race and...
Oh, we're going to talk about race later.
Okay.
I mean, we're going to talk about as much as two white people in a rather decent, well-off part of Boston can, but yeah, that's one of the things, because I want to talk about that, because it is interesting.
So I like... I think I was drawn to it because it's just so different.
Mm-hmm.
And I forget that these terrible things happened, and they are still happening. And just how different it is in different parts of the country, too.
Yeah.
It's crazy to me.
And the socioeconomic levels.
Yes.
Like, this, it still exists in parts of, you know, the Dust Bowl and parts of Appalachia. Like, there are people still living without running water.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. Okay. So that makes sense. But do you read, if you see, like, a book set in Ohio or set near your hometown, would you pick it out over something else? Okay.
And I have, but you remind me, I've read a couple books. One that I can think of off the top of my head is Still Alice.
I want to read that. Is it good?
Yes. And it's set in Cambridge.
Yeah.
And so a lot of it is just describing, like, where she's walking and what she's doing. And I like that connection to a book.
I didn't know it was Cambridge.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
I think she has some sort of affiliation with Harvard.
I've only not read it because I know I'm going to bawl.
Like, yeah, I cried.
I'm going to bawl. Have you seen the film yet?
No, I'm nervous too.
I had a friend.
Because I really liked the book, and I don't want to.
I had a friend who hasn't read the book, but she saw the film on a trip recently, and she said it was really good.
Really? I'll have to do it.
I love Julianne Moore, so I want to go see it, but I'm like, I don't want to sit in the theater bawling my eyes out. Yeah.
Oh, no, I'm a crier. Yeah, so I would rather cry at my apartment.
Worst movie you've ever cried at. Most embarrassing that you can think of.
Oh, we watched part of, was it Armageddon? In college, in my communications class. We watched part of Armageddon, we watched part of Big Fish. So they were just little snippets, but they were like the most emotional parts where like somebody's dying or saying goodbye. I cried in class, and I just can't help it.
I'm glad someone else says that. I would read books. Most embarrassing book I've probably ever read and cried at was a Star Wars novel. And one of my favorite characters died, and I was at the, I was in the library at lunch, and like tears were streaming down my face, and I had to go to class when it was done, so I like tried to wipe them up, and my teacher pulled me aside and was like, are you okay? I'm like, I'm fine. I'm not gonna explain why, but I'm okay.
Yeah, I can't. Books, movies, even music. Catch me on a certain day, or like, I believe that every once in a while you just need to cry.
You need a good cry.
So sometimes it collides with like a book that I'm reading or a movie, and I just,
now,
I can't stop.
Live music? Do you like?
Yes.
Live orchestra every time. Just as soon as like as when they're tuning up right before, I'm just like, I get tingles.
Yeah, that string instrument sound, I love it.
Yeah. Have you ever cried at a commercial?
I've teared up at commercials, for sure.
I've never, like, actually, like, cried.
But
I've
the tears have been there.
Yeah, and you're just like, oh, not again.
If the commercial were to keep going, then it would come up.
Oh, no, I agree. Okay, so we went off on a tangent for that one. Stu, now, have you ever read any of her poetry?
No, I'm struggling to remember names of, but I'm sure that I have, but nothing sticks out.
Yeah, I can almost guarantee I've never read anything by her. I'm sure I have seen, we learned at trivia this past week that apparently there's a whole greeting card company made from her poems and that sort of thing. Yeah, I think it's part of Hallmark. And I did not know that. So I'm sure I've read some via, like, flipping through all of the cards, but I just haven't.
I should. I really... That reminds me. I love poetry, and I used to write a lot of poetry.
You like poetry. I used to write poetry, too, but I don't like poetry.
And...
What about it do you like?
I don't... I think I like it because it's... It can be so abstract. Okay. Is that the right kind of word? And you can just... It's like that free flow... I don't know.
Yeah.
But I like it. I feel like it... I think it... It seems like it's more emotional.
Oh, you're such a hippie.
That's, to me, but I should do it more.
Yeah. That's what it is. Like, I think that's why I don't like poetry, because it's... Not, there are obviously the structured ones, the super highly structured ones. But the, like, the interpretive nature of it.
Yeah.
And the like, oh, this word could mean 20 different things. I think they killed me in undergrad and high school.
Right. When they were like, what's overanalyzing? And that's true. I don't like the overanalyzing part. Like, I interpret it my way, you do it yours, and that's how...
If they would have done that, I would probably like poetry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I also connect poetry to song lyrics.
Okay.
And I love I love music lyrics.
Yeah. I could see that.
So.
Now, do you think rappers are poets?
Yeah. Okay. I think, I don't want to say depending on the rapper, but I kind of want to say that.
But you're not
good. Yeah.
I don't know. I just, poetry and I do not get along.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, I've got I don't have poetry books over there, but I've got like, you know, I read The Canterbury Tales, which is poetry. I've got, Nick gave me the Star Wars poetry in the style of Shakespeare. So, you know, like, I like the funny parody type poetry. And I don't mind when there's, like, a book. Margaret Atwood writes a lot of poetry inside of her novels. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind those. But I'm just usually like, is there some deeper meaning I should know?
Yeah.
Because I don't know what's going on.
But, and I think that we were, like, trained to think that way when we learned, or at least when I learned learned about poetry growing up. Right. But no, I haven't read any of her poetry. I should check it out now.
Well, and there's six other novels, or six other volumes of hers to check out. And I think it's interesting that this is the one that is in, like, the psyche, like, the collective psyche.
Yeah.
And I wonder why it's this one and not all of them.
Yeah, because I honestly didn't know that there were others.
I didn't either. I had no idea.
But it makes sense, because at the end, I wanted to know what happened.
Yeah. I always say no spoilers, but it's her life, so we know what happens.
Yeah.
She had that... Her son? Was it her son or her daughter?
I think she had a son at the end of the book.
Yeah. Her son. 19. She was having a baby.
Yeah, because I want to know how she got from there to...
Like, where she was.
Where she was.
Yeah.
And I think... A lot of it I think about... From, like, a social worker perspective, especially with, like, the trauma. Yeah. I mean, like, the rape was, you know, most definitely a trauma. And how do you go on from that and be successful and persevere, be just, like, an amazing woman? That, I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I was interested.
It impacts people in different ways.
So because that was 20, so that brought us almost to 1950. And I want to know, what I'm interested in is during the Civil Rights Movement.
Oh, yeah.
What she was doing, who she was talking to. Because I kind of have a feeling that that was sort of like where her elevator skyrocketed. Because, you know, this was published in 1969. She is most well known for The Caged Bird.
Mm-hmm.
I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings, which, isn't that from a piece of poem, a poetry, piece of poetry?
I think so.
Okay. Because that's one of the things I always do when I read. I try and find, like, where the title is from. And maybe that's what it was, but...
I think it was towards the beginning.
Okay.
Because I always look for that, too.
Yeah.
I, like, try to figure out why...
Yeah, but it is. And so, like, I sort of want to read the rest of them, but I'm also kind of, like, I don't know if I want to.
Yeah.
Because it's, like, I don't know if I want to know all of the other things she had to suffer to get to become this amazing woman. But at the same time, it would be amazing to know.
Yeah.
The one thing that I do know is that when she died, she was working at a school, a college.
Oh, really?
In North Carolina, Wake Forest.
Oh, wow.
And I remember when...
As a professor?
As like a visiting or adjunct professor. And I remember, I think it's adjunct, she may have been a professor for all I know. But I remember when she moved there. I had never read anything by her, but I knew her name, and I remember seeing it on, like, the news.
Wow.
Yeah, and it was really neat.
I can't imagine, learn that. Like, as a student, having her as your professor.
or just having the opportunity to just go
meet her.
Yeah, just be like, oh, Maya Angelou's giving a reading.
Yeah,
in the quad, or you know, next door. Let's go to the biggest elephant in the room. Like I said earlier, we are two white people.
Yes.
We come from, you know, you're Midwest, I'm Southern. I wouldn't say well off, but, you know, probably middle class.
Yeah.
Comfortable, quote unquote.
Yep.
Families, and we're reading this book. Now, one of the things, you know, this book about a very poor black family mm-hmm. in the Deep South. So, like,
oh, yeah.
I'm Southern, but I am not from the Deep South. Mm-hmm. That's a completely different experience. Like, North Carolina, Virginia, Tennessee, like all of those, with the exception of maybe Appalachia, should probably mm-hmm. be their own region because it's yeah. this weird mix. I grew up in a military town, so it's not, it's mm-hmm. less Southern than anything. But then we're reading about Maya Angelou's experience in a very, very poor, poverty-stricken town in the Deep South.
Yeah.
And then she goes to, what was it, St. Louis?
Yeah, St. Louis.
St. Louis, St. Louis. I never know if it's St. Louis or St. Louis. St. Louis, Missouri. Remember?
St. Louis, then back home.
Then back to Stamps.
And then to San Francisco.
Yes.
I think they were in L.A. with
Oh, they were in L.A. for a
Mama
while, but they ended
stayed
up
for
in
a little
San
bit,
Francisco
and then
because
San
she does
Francisco.
The cable cars.
Yes.
Okay.
Which I liked that part, where she just was so persistent
yeah.
about it.
Well, and that made
oh,
you see
I just,
where how she got to where she
yeah.
got. It was like, okay, if you're going to do that for that, you're going to make it.
Because how old was she at that? She was 17, 16?
She had to lie.
She lied that she was 19.
Yeah, she was either 16 or 17.
I thought that was very powerful.
Yeah.
I was going to be like, you go, girl.
Yeah, well, and that was one of the things I wrote about when I wrote about this post, when I wrote about this book on the blog.
Mm-hmm.
I was mad at myself because of an assumption I made. There were a couple of times where I was like, oh, Maya Angelou is becoming an angry black woman, and this mm-hmm. is where it starts. But then each time that I thought that, within two or three paragraphs, she turned around and did something powerful or said something
yeah.
powerful, where I was like, ah, oh, I am an idiot. I have really got to check my prejudices mm-hmm. and my privilege at the door. Because
yeah.
it was like, this woman was so intelligent. She was so persistent. You are a powerful woman who is finding what she wants in the world and doing what she wants in
yeah.
the world, right? But what's interesting, so, you know, the race relations in this book, it is one of the things that it is well known for.
Mm-hmm.
I was actually a little bit surprised the KKK didn't play a bigger picture.
Oh, yeah. When did they, like, first...
I have no idea. I think they first started, I think, after the Civil War.
Yeah.
With all of that. But they were still going strong, even through
yeah.
her 20s, probably into the 60s would be my guess. But there was only the one instance, really. I mean, I guess it was so all-pervasive that far in the Deep South, just the institutional racism, the whites treating all blacks as trash,
yeah.
And the poor whites being the worst about it.
Yeah, what did they call the poor whites... There was a name for them. It was like the whites and then the poorer whites. And then, but I thought that was interesting too. I didn't know that, I thought that they would have lumped them all together.
That makes you wonder, you know, obviously she did not grow up, Maya Angelou did not grow up in a life of privilege.
Like, right.
They were still very poor. They were living in the South and they were very poor. But at the same time, they did have a... There were, because of her grandmother...
Mm-hmm.
What's her grandma's name? Do you remember?
All I know is she called her Mama.
Yeah.
Which kind of threw me off for a while. I was like, wait, Mama? And then it realized...
Yeah. And then Junior, being Junior...
Yeah.
Was... That was his... Yeah. I was confused about the names because it was all the nicknames. The grandmother was an influential person.
She was.
Like, and not just, we find later in the book, with the whole dentist thing, not just in the black community.
Mm-hmm.
She apparently had kept a lot of white people afloat during the Depression. And you're just kind of like, wow. So she had this strong female figure. I cannot find what
they called him. Yeah, I remember quite a few points.
Well, white trash, but.
Quite a few points in the book. I just felt so angry.
Yeah.
I think especially at the beginning when, like, the way the white kids treated Mama.
Oh.
Just, I can't imagine as, like, you know, Maya Angelou being, like, a young child and seeing that.
Yeah.
That, I don't know, it just broke my heart.
Yeah, well, and, like, knowing where she ended. Where,
yeah.
You know, you have to wonder, I hope in the next few books that she talks about her grandmother's feelings of her, you know, making something of herself.
Yeah.
Because you see what her, we only see a very brief glimpse of what her grandmother and uncle went through.
Yeah.
And had to go through constantly. But what I found really interesting is the book written in 1969, the experience from 1929 to 1949, roughly. So she's covering those years. How little has changed.
Yeah.
Like, especially the institutional racism. Mm-hmm. Like, the with the cops and the undertakers and, like, all just... It was them talking about that scene when Junior is forced to carry the drowned black man.
Oh, yeah.
It just... It reminded me so much of the scene... I think it was the one in Baltimore. It's so bad I can't even think of which one's which at this point. In Baltimore with the young man... In the back of the cop car.
Mm.
That they just took him... I don't even know what they call it. It's some horrible term. They just drove him around.
Threw him in there.
Yeah, threw him around. Threw him in there and then drove him around so that he... And he died, like, 3 days later.
Yeah.
Like, it's still happening.
Right. And it's interesting, especially, you know, just in within the last year, 2 years, especially. I mean, it's been there forever.
Yeah.
But then I think it's heightened more because I... You know, I think a lot of people who are... You know, they're not around it. They don't see it. They probably think that it's not there anymore. Like, oh, that doesn't exist. But then I think the last couple of years have really brought it back up. Like, no, it's still there. We haven't heard about a lot of the things that go on. That's interesting. I hadn't thought of the fact that it's connected it to. There hasn't been that. I mean, there's been changes, but not as drastic changes as there needs to be.
Yeah, because you think, oh, we have a black president. Oh. How many black men have been murdered by police officers in the last 6 months? Mm-hmm. Not even a full year, 6 months. But it's also, it's just, I don't know. I think it would be very interesting. I almost wish she were still here and she could write a think piece saying, hey, I wrote this 45 years ago. Why has nothing changed? I mean, but I guess there are people that were writing well before that also.
Yeah.
That were writing, you know, Harriet Beecher Stowe who wrote Uncle Tom's Cabin?
Yes. I think so.
Did she also write, make up the bunny books? Little Peter Cottontail?
Oh, did she?
Oh, no, Beatrix Potter.
Oh, yes.
And Harriet Beecher. So, okay. I was like, there's something wrong there. They sound similar.
Yeah.
It's very, I just, again, it's a book that I almost wish I was forced to read in high school.
Mm-hmm.
But then I don't, effective it would have been, because there was... In all of my classes, I believe there were 3 black students.
Wow.
And my school was probably 60-40 black to white.
Jeez.
Yeah. Like, I don't think it would have been effective. And I had 1 black teacher, and she was my homeroom teacher.
Was it ever a topic of discussion? Like, was race ever talked about?
I don't think so.
Because I'm thinking, it was never discussed, and I went to a predominantly white high school.
Yeah.
I don't even think I, like, had a black friend until I came to Boston.
Yeah.
But race was never discussed. I never talked about it at all until I got here, and my supervisor she was from Jamaica. And that was the first time that I ever talked about race, and I was 23 at that time, and it had never... Like I learned about, you know, civil rights and all of the history.
But it was very clean. It was very cookie cutter. It was very whitewashed.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is. It's very. It's disturbing.
It
to
is.
To look back at it.
Yeah.
And look at how it's been. But I think what was most disturbing when I was thinking about it, and it was Maya Angelou touched on it as well, is that one of the school. I think it was the school that she got the scholarship to.
Oh, yeah.
Where it was, like, a lot of really rich kids and a lot of poor kids.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of the school that I grew up in.
Where really?
It had the wealthiest neighborhoods and it had the poorest neighborhoods, and we lived in the poorer neighborhood. So, and that's why we lived there, was so that we could go
to that school.
Looking back, you know, it was very whitewashed.
Yeah.
And it's very disturbing.
I agree.
To see. And I do. I almost wish. I would much rather have read this than, say, Shakespeare.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's not an excuse, but my maturity, I don't know if I would have been able to handle it.
And that's, like, I even read it, and I just...
Yeah, you said you don't remember.
Yeah, it didn't stick with me.
Yeah.
Because I think it wasn't, like, we probably read the book, but we didn't talk about
the racial part of
it. I mean, I'm sure it was mentioned, but not to the level that it should have been.
Yeah, not a productive dialogue about
right.
it. What's interesting is that, so I work at a college campus.
Yeah.
And there have been a lot more discussions about race and religion and personal freedom, which I think is good and bad.
Like, within the...
This by the students. The students want to talk about it. There were a lot of voices that were being heard, but it's very... You know, maybe this is coming from a point of privilege. I don't know, but it's sort of... How long do you talk before you take action?
Before you do something.
Like, what is the end point? I do think the discussions are important, and I think they are helpful, but it's sort of like, what is the ultimate outcome?
Yeah.
Is there an end game? I mean, equality is obviously the end game, but how do you get to equality... How do you get from discussions and dialogues to equality? And maybe they can tell us. You know, maybe that's what they're trying to talk about and that's what they're trying to figure out. But I've yet to hear a conversation.
What are we going to do about it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I've yet to hear the conversation that bridges that final gap.
Mm-hmm.
And it's sad that so much of it institutionalized within the law and within the systems and within... The labor movement, like, no matter what happens, it's there, and it's very much trying to, what is it that needs to happen, aside from, like, an apocalypse, and it's just everybody starts over.
Yeah, that's interesting, because I think it starts with the dialogue, and then it, like, there needs to be the action piece.
Yeah.
Like, with Maya Angelou and that little piece of her being persistent about getting the job, like, that's the doing part. That is, I feel like, lacking in a lot of places. Or it's not as... People don't recognize it as much. It's not given... I'm sure there are tons of people that are doing those small things, but if there's a way to... I don't know.
To put more light on them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I think that gives inspiration to others to do it.
Yeah, I think that is. Well, before we transition to the next part, is there anything else in the book that we haven't talked about that sort of stands out that you want to talk about?
Not off the top of my head.
Yeah, me neither. I think we've done... Those were my four big things.
Yeah.
All right, well, when we come back, Emily will be gracing us with her best audio narrator voice, and we
Get
will
ready.
See what she's going to read. And we are back for Emily's audio narration of I Know Why the Caged Bird Sings. She is getting ready to read from the moment when Maya graduates from middle school. And it is a very interesting passage. It is one of the ones that I highlighted and was like, I want to know more about this and I want to talk about it. So Emily is going to read it and then we're going to talk about it.
All right. It was awful to be Negro and have no control over my life. It was brutal to be young and already trained to sit quietly and listen to charges brought against my color with no chance of defense. We should all be dead. I thought I should like to see us all dead, one on top of the other. A pyramid of flesh with the white folks at the bottom, on the bottom, as the broad base. Then the Indians with their silly tomahawks and teepees and wigwams and treaties. The Negroes with their mops and recipes and cotton sacks and spirituals sticking out of their mouths. The Dutch children should all stumble in their wooden shoes and break their necks. The French should choke to death on the Louisiana Purchase, while silkworms ate all the Chinese with their stupid pigtails. As a species, we were an abomination, all of us.
I wish I should have had a recording of that so they could see your face when you finished it. Powerful.
Very powerful. And I think when she talks about a lot of the racial parts, I have to remember that she's a kid.
Yeah.
Well, like, when she's in it all, like, she's a kid. And
well, it makes you wonder, that thought particular, do you think she had that as a 12-year-old getting ready to go into high school? Or is that something she's projecting back on her experience? I mean, either way, it's a legitimate experience and horrifyingly beautiful the way she writes it. And it's something that you kind of have to agree with. But it is. Is she projecting it back, or do you think she was having those similar thoughts?
I think that she probably had those thoughts, but she could articulate it better looking back.
Yeah.
It's just a very powerful way of...
trashing humanity.
Yeah.
But she's not wrong.
No, she's not. And she's still not wrong.
Yeah, and I think that is what hit me, was mm-hmm. that it was like, holy shit. She wrote this in 1969. She experienced it in the early 40s.
Yeah.
And 80 years later?
Oh my gosh.
Almost 80 years later, it's still the same.
Right.
And it is very much like, it's that whole idea of humanity's going to kill the world.
Mm-hmm.
And the only good that's going to come of it is we're going to kill humanity.
Right.
And the universe might be better because of it.
Yeah. I think about this a lot. I think just in, because of work related mm-hmm. stuff, but man, I don't know. I think the answer is so simple, but it just, I don't know what it is. If it's how people were raised, just how they think of the world. I don't know. I think it's just so frustrating because
yeah.
I'm not religious. And so when I think of like religion in my mind, it's treat others as you want to be treated.
Yeah.
And that to me is so basic. I know that there's a lot more to it, obviously, but a lot of it does come from a very basic understanding of how we treat people.
Yeah, and it makes you sad. I mean, it's I could not imagine being 12 years old and thinking that, and then still thinking it 80 years later.
Yeah.
Even though we already know that it's happening. It is. It's just such. I think that was one of those moments where I was like, oh no, she's turning into an angry black mm-hmm. woman. But then she turns around on the next page and she's just like, but this is the future. This generation of kids, we are moving forward. We're smart. We're intelligent. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't tell us that we are going to be laborers, that we are going to be waitresses and housekeepers.
Yeah.
We are going to be writers and doctors and mm-hmm. lawyers. And that, so it was very, I don't know if it was a literary device. I don't know if she wrote it in such a way as to put you so far down to then lift you so far up.
Yeah.
Because either way, it's true.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so. But I picked that one out because it was really powerful.
And it coincided with such like a happy... But yeah, that even she's so excited about her graduation and all these presents, and then that's great and everything, but there's still this.
Yeah.
This big piece.
Yeah, it is. So, well, that was a downer. We know she went on. She made a lot of a lot of great things. She went on to be a successful,
man.
Incredibly successful individual.
Yeah.
And she lived a great long life.
Oh, yeah.
So, all right, well, when we come back again one more time, we are going to do I was going to say it's my favorite part, but my favorite part is what we just did.
Yeah.
I love to hear everyone else read, because invariably you all have better, like, audio narration voices than I do. Mm. Although I feel like when I do it, I should be like, end this time.
Yeah.
Or what is it? Or, no, what was it? Previously on As the World Turns.
Yeah.
That's my favorite one to do. But everyone has really good audio narration voices, so I really love that part.
Yeah, that's cool.
When we come back, we are going to do the question and answer session. That's the best part, because it has nothing to do with the book. So we will be right back. Now for the question and answer session. No, don't look that nervous. It's
I'm like, in the hot seat.
Yeah, it's your reading habits. It's fun stuff like that. And it's sort of, this is the part where I get to chastise everyone, because most everyone doesn't do something, or they do something.
Yeah.
And I'm like, you should do it this way. So the very first question is, do you own a library card?
I do own a library card.
Where is it to?
To Boston Public Library. And this is the perfect timing for you to ask me this question, because I got it a while ago so I could get discount tickets to...
Smart. So many people don't know that our library does that, and many local libraries do that.
But since moving to the North End, there is one that's... It might be a 5-minute walk.
Okay.
It's so close, and I've been there quite a few times.
Oh, that's
and
so
I
nice.
Love it. I forget how much I love going to the library.
Oh, that's the first thing I do when I move somewhere, is I look to see how close the local library is. It's a mile from me here, and it's like a mile and a tenth from South Boston.
Yeah.
So I was like, yay!
That's
although
perfect.
It is uphill. I was sad about that one. So yeah, you own a library card.
Yes, I do.
Do you remember your first library card?
Yes. My mom took my brother and I to the library all of the time.
Yeah.
I pretty much grew up at the library.
Nice.
And I remember thinking, like, I can never have enough books.
Yeah.
I just wanted to bring home all of the books, and we'd rent movies too. And I think a lot of the reason why we went there was... It was free, and they would do readings for kids or whatever.
Oh, yeah,
and
like in the playrooms.
I just love going to the library.
When you're from Ohio, did you spend most of your youth there? Where were you?
When I was young, like elementary age, I was in Richmond, Virginia.
Oh, okay. Did they have a good like public library system?
Yes, it was amazing. Okay.
Because Boston has a good one. We had a great one where I was in North Carolina, and part of that is how it's set up. But Boston has a great one, too. They're facing a lot of funding cuts. Have you ever taken a tour of the big Boston Library?
No, but I have done my own tour of just walking around. Okay. It's cool.
It is spot. Beautiful.
I want to have dinner there. The courtyard is cool.
But we should. I need to get everyone together, and we need to take the tour. Like they do a tour.
I didn't know they did that.
3 or 4 times a week, it's free, and they just walk through and tell you the history of the building. And I've done the one for the New York Public Library, and I really should do the Boston Public.
Oh, I'm in. When I've just walked around on myself, just kind of gotten
so
lost.
Gorgeous.
It's beautiful. I would love to hear
the history
more about it. Yeah. So sign me up for that.
Right, so good. Yay! Have a library card. Yes. You're gonna get a library with me.
Yeah.
I always chastise people. They're like, no, I don't have one. I'm like, no.
Got one of those.
Do you own a digital reading device?
I do not.
Ooh, any particular reason?
I am thinking that I want to get one now.
Okay.
But I love books.
Yeah.
I love to hold them, and then when I'm done, I like to put them on my bookcase.
Okay.
And I like how they look. I don't know, everything about books I like.
Yeah.
So I've been apprehensive about getting like a Kindle or a iPad or whatever.
Yeah. So it's funny, I'm the opposite. I love them, but once I read them, unless it's like something I know I'm going to reread, goodbye.
Really?
That's that bag over there. It's like, those are the ones I've read. You can move on. I mean, you obviously prefer books over physical books. Physical books over ebooks.
Mm-hmm.
The one advantage that I've found, obviously, is traveling and on the T.
Yes.
The Kindle, so much easier. So, you know, take in all your options.
I've just wrapped my brain around getting one.
Okay.
And mainly it is for travel. I fly a lot. And
every time you go home. And you take so many books with you.
Right.
Yeah. That's good. What about audiobooks? Do you listen to audiobooks?
So, my college roommate and I used to, when we've taken road trips over the years,
mm-hmm.
and we would listen to audiobooks.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
I think it was more so, like, we have 8 hours together, so let's break it up with an audiobook. We only listened to ones by a certain author. He wrote, it was more of, like, suspense.
Okay.
So it just, it was very interesting.
Yeah. Okay. All
right. But I'm struggling to remember his name right now.
No worries.
Do you listen to audiobooks?
No.
No.
I've listened to the Harry Potter ones.
Yeah.
Both the British and the American ones are great adaptations. Everyone so far has told me that if you're going to listen to some, you should listen to like a celebrity audiobook that's narrated by them.
Oh.
So like what was the last book that you read?
The last book that I read,
was it Persuasion by chance?
Oh, I mean, I started Persuasion.
Oh, did you not finish?
I did some spark notes.
Oh, you have to read the ending. The last, like, 20 pages are the most romantic pages.
Really?
Yeah.
I think I struggle with her writing because there's so many people.
Yeah.
And I cannot keep all that. I need to just, the next book, write down all of the characters and who they are and what other names they go by.
But did you read something instead of after Persuasion? Or
yeah, I've been, well, I reread Glass Castle.
Oh, who's that by? I've never.
Jeanette Wells.
Okay.
It's a memoir.
Is it good?
Hands down, it's my favorite book.
Oh, okay.
I highly recommend.
Okay, and that might be your answer to the last question. So you just said that's your favorite book. I know you said you love memoirs. Is that your favorite genre, or what's your favorite genre?
See, most of the books that I read come recommended from my mom, and so I feel like I read my mom's books.
Okay.
And her genre is kind of along like the memoir line, but I think the reason why I liked the book so much was because it went through every emotion. Like, I felt happy, I felt sad, I felt angry, I felt all of them, I laughed, I cried. I don't know, so I just liked that part of it.
Yeah.
And this woman, kind of similar to Maya Angelou, had a rough upbringing, very poor, very kind of like a disorganized family. I guess Maya Angelou didn't have that, but, and then she became this amazing author, and
The last and final question, which I said you probably have already just answered. If you could make me read one book or you could suggest one book, what would it be?
Definitely The Glass Castle. Okay. And then another...
And Jeanette Wall?
Jeanette Walls. I have it. Okay. I can lend it to you. And then it was a book written about 9/11 from a boy's perspective, and he loses his father. And it's a movie.
I've got it. Incredibly Loud and Close,
yes,
something like
extremely
that.
Extremely Loud and Incredibly Close.
Yes. Is it? It's not Franzen, is it? No. Who is it? I don't know. I can see it from here, but I cannot read the author's name.
I loved that book.
I have...
I don't know. Even if you flip through, I don't know what version you have, but the one that I read, the pages, it would have some pictures, okay, and then the writing would kind of be all in, like, crazy design, but it's just, like, just how it was presented was just so cool, and I loved the story. The movie didn't do it justice. It kind of made me angry, but the book, 100%.
I've had it for a while, but I've stayed away from it because I feel like it's going to be one of those where I'm like, I don't know whether I'm supposed to bawl or not bawl.
Yeah, it's definitely emotional, but you get so attached. I love when I just feel so attached to characters.
Okay, yeah, all right. Well, that is everything that we have. Thank you so much for coming.
Yes, thank you. This is awesome.
Just, you know, same thing I always say, check out my blog at jeffwhaley.com. I'm on Twitter at jeff_whaley. Emily is not on any of these things. She said she just joined Instagram. Baby steps. If she posts before this goes live, I will sneak her link into the show notes. But until next time, bye for now.
Bye.